This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
For a lot of people thinking about 9/11, the question always becomes, are we safer? And how do we measure that? And how do we answer that question? Hi, everybody. Kate Delaney. There's so much going on when it comes to the Bahamas and what happened with Dorian and power being restored. I've talked to people in Charleston, South Carolina. I talked to somebody in Georgia who had to evacuate because of what could have been a disastrous for them. So while the Bahamian people look for help, and others in the United States definitely felt the effects of Dorian, but not as fast and furious as we thought, we also have an intense look at vaping, something that has become a phenomenon in this country, but now people are dying over vaping, but the investigations are still ongoing as to what are the elements that are involved in the mix of what people are vaping. The president called vaping a problem, and his health secretary said the government would force companies to remove flavored vaping products from the market after all these reports are breaking of deaths, mostly of teenagers. But there was one 50-year-old woman who also died. 9/11, let's go back to that for a moment, since that's where I started, affected my life. I've said this. I won't go too deep into what happened with me, because I think the significance is the loss of all the people, 3,000 people, the shock, the horror of it. I will just tell you this one story, true story. It was days before 9/11. The U.S. Open was going on. I was so excited because I'd gotten this job in New York and everything was changing for me. And my family lived close and we were in, you know, New Jersey. So I got tickets, was able to get great tickets for my mother through a tennis pro who left some tickets for me. And I had a press pass and we went to the Open. We had a great time and we took the train. And when you take the train, you would look out the window and you would see the World Trade Centers, because, you know, we just always saw the World Trade Centers when we went to New York. I used to go up in them a lot. And from a distance, it had been such a long time, my mother turned to me and said, you know what, maybe next month we come back and we go to the World Trade Center. Maybe we go have lunch, we go up into the World Trade Center, because I haven't been up with you since you were a little girl. And I said, that would be great. And I'd only been back east for a couple of weeks, and then 9/11 happens and the towers go down, and it was startling and horrible, and, you know, everything in between, and not knowing what happened. And we still have questions that linger from 9/11. I think it's tremendous when you've got the annual 9/11 memorial service in New York, where you read the names of everybody who lost their lives, and usually it's a family member reading the name, and I think there's power in that to never, ever, ever, ever forget, because that's what happens. You know, you move forward and you can forget. So you see stickers, you still see lots of stickers that say never, ever, ever forget. And we won't ever forget what happened on 9/11. Are we safer? In some senses, yes. In others, I don't think so. Because we still have situations where people, I think if they wanted to find a way, they will find a way. Although the CIA, the FBI are cooperating more, from everything that I know from sources and just from information that's out there. And I believe, and I know this to be true, and you know this to be true, because some of this has been reported, that there have been plots that have been thwarted. So that's a good thing. There are some really smart people that are at work constantly trying to break the code of what's next, what are they trying to do, what group, what radicalized group is doing X, Y, Z. And then it's the lone wolf that the concern is over, and we see this with the mass shootings, so that's not even linked to Al-Qaeda or the Taliban or any of that. The mystery of vaping and this terrible, terrible epidemic of teenage vaping and the mysterious illness that is starting to happen with the cigarette alternative, and the president now involved in saying, we're looking at the oversight of this because it's a public health concern. You know, there's 5 million kids that say they vape this year. And I think it gets higher and higher because it's a cool thing to do. You do what the cool kids do, and they're vaping. It was touted as safe and effective for adult smokers to quit their cigarette habit, and investors poured billions of dollars into the business. But then you have candy-like kind of flavorings. You have sleek electronic devices. It's the whole trendy thing on social media. It lures the kids into it. And this is what's happened, and now more people are getting sick. I have another take on this when we get to my take in the next segment, but it's something that has to be paid attention to, because for the sake of teenagers who are part of this revolution of vaping, and you see vape shops everywhere. Everywhere I go, every time I travel, I see a vape shop. I saw 3 vape shops, one in a little town called Sweetwater, Georgia. Of course, in Atlanta, I was making a U-turn. I saw a vape shop there, and I know they have tons of vape shops there. I mean, everywhere you go, it's so popular, and people are capitalizing on that. So I guarantee there's people that want to protect their turf, but if the president is raising the concern, too, he's even raising the flag. I mean, that pretty much tells you something right there, that it's something to pay. It's something to pay attention to. Absolutely. Like I said, I'll go a little bit deeper on this. How about this? The Supreme Court allowed broad enforcement of asylum limits. So what does that mean? The High Court, I'll just break it down quickly, ruled in favor of the Trump administration. They lifted a block on a rule that prevents most Central American immigrants from seeking asylum in the U.S. I talked about this briefly the other day. This is a big one, but the justice's order late Wednesday temporarily undoes a lower court ruling that had blocked the new asylum policy in some states along the southern border. So really the policy is meant to deny asylum to anyone who passes through another country on the way to the U.S. without seeking protection there. So I can't cut across. There's no shortcut. You can't do that. You look at most of the people crossing the southern border, they're Central Americans getting away from poverty, violence, that kind of stuff, and they're pretty much ineligible under this new rule. And they're not the only ones. Asylum seekers from Africa, Asia, South America, they go to the southern border, same thing. So this is a big reversal of a policy that's been in place for decades. And they're saying that they want to close the gap, the administration, between an initial asylum screening that most people pass and a final decision on asylums that most people don't win. That they don't win. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Sonia Sotomayor, dissented from the High Court's order, but it goes and it flips over a court's ruling, previous ruling. And this is very, very big. So lots of people that are seeking asylum under the new rule would be ineligible. My take next, full on vaping.
Warning, if you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $10,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to let us settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-976-1460. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt,
Do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now. 1-800-976-1460. That's 1-800-976-1460. 1-800-976-1460.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with Reputation Defender. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with Reputation Defender. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771. For your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with Reputation Defender. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771.
Dehebo Tea Club's original pure Pau de Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. So it naturally has antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-infection, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. But maybe more importantly, Dehebo Tea Club's original pure Pau de Arco Super Tea builds corpuscles in the blood which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer happens to die in oxygen. The tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. Dehebo Tea Club's original pure Pau de Arco Super Tea is only $34.95 plus shipping. Order now at drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com, 818-965-9113. drinksupertea.com.
It's a wrap with Kate's Take.
Yes, let's talk a little bit more about vaping and should it be off the market and off of our minds, our teenagers' minds. I'd be losing my mind if my nephew vaped, but I just saw him and he's not a vapor. I asked him about kids at school, and he said, yes, 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 they like to vape, Aunt Kate. I'm like, great. When do they do that? Well, in between classes, they go outside and vape. Oh. And we had a sixth person, I'm just going to reiterate this, that died from lung disease related to vaping. And this is according to the people in Kansas City, the health officials there. She was over 50, had a history of problems. Okay, we get it. They don't even know what vaping products she used. They're concerned about that. They're looking into it. The fact that we have probably or possibly, I guess it's fair to say, 450 cases of lung illness associated with e-cigarettes is scary to me. Reported to the CDC across 33 states in the U.S. Virgin Islands. So the five deaths were reported in Cali, Illinois, Indiana, Minnesota, and Oregon. The first death from lung illness linked to vaping was reported in August, and the person who died was an adult. The second death then was Minnesota and Indiana, the fifth in California, so you get it. Bottom line is they're investigating the link between vaping and severe lung illness. It's ongoing. But in all the cases reported, they used e-cigarette products, and some patients reported using e-cigarettes containing cannabinoid products, like THC. So they're looking at what they're vaping, obviously, what the product was, and this vitamin E chemical is key in some of the investigations because of the thickeners. And they're saying it's pure vitamin E acetate oil So is it? Here's what one doctor said. The secretary for the Kansas City Department, or the Kansas, I keep saying city, the Kansas Department of Health and Environment. He said, look, it's time to stop vaping. If you or a loved one is vaping, stop. The deaths across our country, combined with hundreds of reported lung injury cases, are intensifying. I'm alarmed for the health and safety of Kansans who are using vaping products and urge them to stop. I'm saying the same thing. I would just put a finger in it. That's what I would do. I would just wait. If you love vaping, I would wait to see what the final outcome is, but I would be hard pressed to do it. And somebody could argue and say, well, what if I smoke cigarettes? And, you know, we know that you can get lung disease, you can get emphysema, you can get all kinds of things, you can get cancer. But I want to smoke, so I'm going to go smoke. It seems like you might have a better chance smoking now than vaping. And we still don't know. There's lots we don't know, but the youth vaping is an epidemic. And I think that's scary, because when you're doing that and then we're seeing the effect of that, oh, the impact, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. So they're going to have some kind of requirements for non-tobacco flavored e-cigarettes, I guess. And what about, and that's the part of it, what about unauthorized products and probably some of these deaths? That's what it is, right? It's like when you go to the market and you get a knockoff, whatever, the store brand. This doesn't kill you. But in this case, if you get the knockoffs to whatever the best is, it's not good. I mean, it has to be regulated. Right? You just can't let people die. That sounds funny. You can't let people die. To knowing that there's this epidemic going on, and this is why the president jumps on it too, is because you got to do something. It's not good to see these high school kids really putting themselves at risk. Ban the flavors. Just ban the flavors. That's the thing. That's what you can do to reduce the use. Because the flavors are attractive to the kids. I mean, if you can think of any flavor, and trust me, they have it. Last week, the Michigan governor, Gretchen Whitmer, announced that that state is going to become the first to ban the sale of flavored e-cigarettes. So that would give sellers 30 days to comply, and it lasts 6 months. And then the governor can decide to renew it. And that includes sales in brick-and-mortar stores and online. In July, the San Francisco mayor signed an ordinance that banned e-cigarette sales in the city. It was the first in the United States. I think there has to be warnings to minors. There's a big black market. Guarantee somebody comes up with something on the black market for vaping. But I say bravo to the president for jumping on it, hearing the information. Look, he's got a kid that's almost a teenager. Can you imagine? And as I said, it's a cool thing because you've got different kinds of flavors. You've also got different ways to vape. I mean, I'm hard-pressed to tell you a day where I don't see at least 20 people vaping. Whether I'm driving by in a car, I'm seeing someone come out of a store, go in a store, whatever it is. But I see it constantly. So if you know it's a direct line, and someone could say, well, cancer is a direct line to death, or could be a direct line to death. So isn't this the same? It's not the same thing. Comparing all these other horrible things that can happen to you does not sway me. I think there should be the ban. So it's going to be interesting when I talk to a guy that I actually really respect and we've had on the show before, is Dr. Joel Nitzkin, because he's a health policy consultant, and he has been a huge advocate for tobacco harm reduction, and he feels like that's what e-cigarettes do, that it's reduction. And it helps people who just cannot completely kick the nicotine habit. It helps dial it down for them. And I don't know if I would argue that point. I think there has to be a teenage ban. I mean, is it better to have a little bit of nicotine, then a lot. I said this earlier, sure. But across the board, no regulations. I mean, and we do, and there's still some we don't know. There's still some details we don't know. Are the majority of the lung injuries a result of the vaping, the THC, and the cannabis products in some sort of oil-based medium? And then a ban on all flavored cigarettes, does that make sense? I mean, do you take away an entire category of safer alternative nicotine products or no? I mean, you got to find the outbreak. That's the bottom line. You got to find the outbreak of what the illness is. That's it. But I think a ban for youth vaping, yes. Yes, yes, yes. Just do it. If I were a parent of a teenager, I wouldn't want them vaping after hearing these stories that I've heard. And, you know, call me... No, don't call me crazy. Call me cautious. I'll take that all day long. I would be concerned if my nephew was vaping, but he has no desire to do it. So he's not vaping. Not vaping. Ban it for the youth. For the adults, I guess, could be dealer's choice. You deal your own destiny. Like I say in my book, pick the card if that's what you think. But I would pay close attention to what's happening with these investigations, because there may be something that we don't know. But the U.S. banning flavored cigarettes, oh, there definitely would be the producers of those that would go crazy when you have your foot on the gas and you have such a product that people are inhaling. Are you kidding? And part of it is the whole device thing for teenagers. And it's the vaping products that contain the THC. Those are the ones that are at the most risk. The most risk. It's interesting. Michael Bloomberg, the founder and majority owner of Bloomberg News, has campaigned and given money in support of a ban on flavored e-cigarettes and tobacco. So he was there all along for this. And now there really is something to it, the exposure for younger people and their lungs, and the damage is, frankly, frightening. And you have the Health and Human Services Secretary telling reporters that 5 million kids say that they vaped. That's a jump from the 3.6. And I think, who knows if it's higher or not? Like I said, I see it happening all around me. So when you decide you're going to go up in a puff of smoke, you don't want to go up in a vaping cloud. Nobody wants to have their lung collapse. It is the worst feeling in the world to struggle to breathe. Don't put yourself in that position. I'm off my soapbox. Hang with us.
The Genesis Communications Network is one of America's premier broadcasters of captivating talk radio. We thank you for listening. Now, just imagine, there are thousands of people who are just as passionate about radio as you are. But what you may not realize is how easy and affordable it is to advertise with us. Radio commercials for your business could be heard on hundreds of radio stations across the U.S. every day. We can help you by creating an effective radio advertising campaign for your company. From script writing to producing your commercials. Just like the one you're listening to right now. No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com. And an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Amid an alarming increase in lung illnesses and even deaths blamed on vaping, President Trump has announced plans for a ban.
People are dying with vaping.
As he sat alongside Melania in the Oval Office, He spoke, saying more Americans need to know how dangerous vaping can be.
People think it's an easy solution to cigarettes, but it's turned out that it has its own difficulties.
Now his administration will move to ban the sale of flavored e-cigarettes, often preferred by teens. Health Secretary Alex Azar says within months,
all flavors other than tobacco flavor would be removed from the market.
On Wall Street, markets were up at the close. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 227 points, the S&P 500 up 21, and the NASDAQ up 85. This is USA Radio News.
Hamilton was adopted from a rescue in 2008. He really likes to be around people. I get out my mat and I'm doing a downward dog and he's underneath. He's quite the pug about town. He gets invited to a lot of parties. He knows he's a pretty big deal. Look at this little face. How can you not love him?
Hamilton the Pug, Instagram star, and shelter pet. Amazing adoption stories start in shelters. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now, before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Welcome to the show, Josh Phillips. He's researched, reported on the Chinese Communist Party for, get this, a decade. He is absolutely a recognized expert on unrestricted warfare, the global threat, and subversion. Wow. There's so much to talk to him. We'd take up the whole show, and we can't do that because he's got things he has to do. And, of course, here we have other things we have to do as well. But I am really, honestly, psyched to welcome him to the show. And, of course, you can catch his work on the Epoch Times. Josh Phillips, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Hey, real pleasure being here, and I think there's some great things to talk about.
Yeah, let's talk about the thing that people constantly hear about, cyber warfare, hacks, breaching networks, launching cyber attacks. What's the deal coming out of China with that?
So we often make the mistake, I think, when we read about cyber attacks, of understanding cyber as being kind of something isolated, something in an, you know, alone and kind of working on its own, when in reality it's part of a much broader strategy, and it's more of an unconventional tool within that strategy.
Ah, so I like that, an unconventional tool. And, of course, it's one where there's a mad race to create those hacks, et cetera, and then it's everybody else scrambling to figure out what we're going to do about it ultimately. And we know it comes from all corners of the world, that's for sure. Economically speaking, obviously, the tariffs, what's happening there, our president pushing them off, the rest of them, until mid-December. But the Chinese are really digging in on that, aren't they? They're not letting up.
They've been on this for a long time. And I'd say for the first time, really, as far as I've seen, the United States is actually pushing back against it. And this ties back into the issue of cyber threats and cybersecurity and what the Chinese Communist Party has been doing for a very long time. So let's let's have a quick overview of where things are at. So the Chinese Communist Party has had many programs which direct cyber attacks for the purpose of economic theft. Among these, probably the biggest one was Project 863, which, you know, was defined as this idea to, quote, catch up fast and surpass the West. It identified different key technological areas where the Chinese Communist Party could, you know, steal intellectual property and build its own high-tech markets to challenge the U.S. and global markets, not necessarily U.S.-China markets, but in places like Africa, Latin America, and so on. If we want to talk about the bigger picture of cybersecurity, or cyber threats, I guess we could say, this ties also into what the Chinese military would call unrestricted warfare.
Mm.
The cyber attacks would be a tool within that. And basically, this is a series of non-military, trans-military, and military tactics. The idea is you look at a country, you look at what you would want to achieve in a war with that country, and then you think about how to obtain those same objectives using non-military means wherever possible. And so that is economic warfare, business warfare, culture warfare, drug warfare, psychological warfare, basically ways to achieve the goals of war without having to fire a bullet.
Wow, and we've seen, as you say that, the different tentacles, we've seen that working well for the Chinese Communist Party. When you look at psychological warfare, what do you think we're mainly talking about?
So psychological warfare is, you know, people think propaganda, disinformation, misinformation. Those would all fall under the umbrella of psychological warfare. The purpose of psychological warfare is not necessarily to feed you false information. It is to alter the way you perceive an issue. And so, you know, we talked about propaganda, misinformation, and disinformation. Propaganda is not necessarily true or false. Propaganda is just meant to make people have an emotional reaction to an issue. And by agitating on that emotional reaction, you can cause them to develop emotional memories, kind of like a Pavlov's dog type theory where you condition a dog to salivate to the sound of a bell. You can cause people to have emotional reactions to certain stimuli, like images or issues, based on what they've been agitated on. That's propaganda. Misinformation is the use of just outright false information. It can be used as kind of a distraction tool. So, you know, sowing confusion, making people unsure what's right or wrong, true or false, you know, discrediting a movement, so on like that. Whereas disinformation is more deceptive. It can take the form of false events. For example, it can take the form of, you know, dressing up, say, police as protesters to make protesters appear to be violent. It can take the form of having something that is 99% true and 1% false, but the 1% false is used as the narrative. And so if people try to attack it, you point to the true elements, whereas the narrative is false. Basically having true information but with a false conclusion, things like that.
Wow. We're speaking with Josh Philip, investigative reporter, senior editor at the Epoch Times. So is China trying to subvert the U.S. in doing this for a decade? Do you really feel like talking about these six types of subversion, and we haven't talked about a couple of them specifically yet, but do you think overall China's trying to subvert the U.S.? Do you feel confident about that?
Absolutely. And I can tell you that that is tied very heavily into my work. Long story short, I started an investigative project back in 2008 where I unintentionally stumbled across what you would call the United Front Department. And this is the Chinese Communist Party's basically main branch for subverting foreign societies. And it works basically, they send agents through the consulates to different Chinese communities, fraternal organizations, they call them tongs, getting into the criminal markets, you know, the triads and things like that, which operate underneath the tongs. And they use these as kind of feelers to get into different parts of society. The triads give them control over the, you know, criminal underworld, underbelly of society. The tongs themselves, you might have police tongs, you might have oil workers tongs, you might have Chinese student tongs. You might have tongs for Chinese hometowns and different associations or networks of individuals, sometimes in the tens of thousands, who work in, you know, targeted industries. And when you're a member of those organizations, you can be tapped to, you know, say, war, you know, serve the interests of the Tong. And they also try to, you know, do, so there was another branch of it called the Overseas Chinese Affairs Office. They've recently folded that just into the United Front Department. It was kind of a fluff facade, I should say. But, you know, they go to U.S. government officials and invite them on propaganda tours in China. Let's say, you know, staying at five-star hotels. But because they can't take donations from a foreign government, you know, they charge maybe $2,000 or something like that.
Right.
And, yeah, you know, and they come back. They're not necessarily bribed, per se, but they've been fed this false image that the Chinese Communist Party wants them to see. And they've been provided with new, you know, quote-unquote Chinese friends who will inform them on Chinese policy and Chinese issues and things like that.
Wow. So, it really goes deep when you talk about the triads, the tongs, getting in every single aspect of society. You talked about you pick a country and what is it you're looking for in going after that country, so to speak. And we see this with currency. Explain financial warfare from your perspective in having covered communist China.
Financial warfare, it's a multifaceted issue. I'm sure a lot of people have heard about the Chinese Communist Party manipulating its currency. They've heard about the Chinese Communist Party stealing intellectual property. But when you get into the deeper parts of it, I think that's where the real meat is. Let's look at the big picture. It would include transaction warfare, the targeting of transactions in process or the targeting of forms of transactions. It's, for example, a website like Amazon could be seen as a platform for transaction. And so they can create an Alibaba to take over that transaction platform. If you want to get into factories and things like this, that gets you into the whole spectrum of industrial warfare. And industrial warfare is what a country produces. Keep in mind that the Chinese Communist Party is still very much communist, and one of the guiding ideas of communism is to seize the means of production. If a country can gain control of the productive elements of another country, then who is really in charge? And when you're dealing with factories, you're not just dealing with the factories themselves. You're dealing with innovation. You're dealing with research and development. You're dealing with supply markets. You're dealing with things like, you know, the string of pearls and trade choke points around the world, things like that. Raw materials, mines, you name it. It's an entire network of things that gives you control over natural resources, productive elements, and innovation.
Wow. So as we summarize all of this, Josh, when you look at it, for people listening in this audience to what you're saying about China, it's to be aware, and to know more of what's really, truly happening and not buy into the propaganda?
Basically. I mean, a lot of what the Chinese Communist Party does only works because they put up this ideological smokescreen. In fact, that's actually part of their military strategy. They have an adopted military strategy called the three warfares. And the three warfares are media warfare, psychological warfare, and legal warfare. In other words, the control and manipulation of outlets of information, the control of and manipulation of perceptions under psychological warfare, and the manipulation of international or local legal systems. How do you manipulate the legal systems of a country or, you know, world courts and things like that to achieve what you want to achieve? And, of course, they feed all this false narrative about, you know, the Chinese Communist Party is just, you know, America's jealous of its rise, and they're just attacking it, and they're being unfair, and that, oh, yeah, they used to persecute people and things like that, but they're trying to change now. Narratives like this that excuse what really is still a very totalitarian regime, a regime that is extremely abusive of its own people, that has killed somewhere between 50 million and 70 million Chinese people and destroyed their culture, destroyed their, you know, the traditional values, yes, but during the Cultural Revolution, for example, and which is continuing that same thread of tyranny, while the world, a lot of it just turns a blind eye to it because of these narratives. I think it's very unfortunate.
Wow. Wow. We could talk all night. Josh, thank you so much for joining us. Food for thought. There's no question about that.
Yeah, real pleasure. Thank you.
Shot at in Mexico, 100 drinks at a well-worn bar with some shady-looking characters in Vegas, riding a bike from Dallas to Seattle on a bet, scribbling the words dungeon on a napkin while two passengers next to you on a plane wonder, what the heck does that mean? I'm Kate Delaney, and what does this have to do with my success? And why do you care? It's part of my journey that I want to share with you in my new book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Luckily, now I can laugh at some of what seemed like utter disasters at the time. Can any of you relate? That's exactly what you'll discover by reading my book. I picture you on a boat, beach, or relaxing in the backyard, laughing out loud until you rupture your spleen. Well, hopefully not. While pulling out some seriously rare and secret stuff. Doesn't matter what you do or where you are right now, anyone in any walk of life can use what I learned in my years of crisscrossing around the United States pursuing my dreams. So what do you want to get out of life? Happiness? Contentment? Why are you here? Pick up my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, at Amazon.com.
Fellow Patriots, my name is Todd Savage, founder of BlackRifleRealEstate.com. Like you, I was a prisoner of the alt-left sanctuary state. Until one day I chose to lead my family to freedom. Today we live on a sustainable 20-acre homestead where we shoot, hunt, garden, and homeschool our children without the tyranny of the nanny state looking over us. If you're ready to flee the city to the freedom of Idaho or Montana, our Black Rifle Real Estate team is here to help. Go to BlackRifleRealEstate.com. That's BlackRifleRealEstate.com.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
Tonight, I'll tell you what, this book really caught my eye. It jumped out at me. In fact, I blew something off over the weekend so that I could get further through it. It's called We Are Market Basket, the story of the unlikely grassroots movement that saved a beloved business. And, you know, we do so much of business here on America Tonight. We're talking about small businesses and getting connected to people and community. Market Basket is incredibly connected to their community, both in and out of the store. Daniel Corson, one of the authors of that book, joins us now. He's in our virtual green room. And Daniel, this story, Market Basket, for people who don't know, in the Northeast, really in the New England area, how many Market Basket stores are there?
At the moment, they've got about 75 stores, yeah, in Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and one in Maine.
Wow. And what happened was, this is a family business. And so the CEO, who was the beloved CEO, suddenly, because of some infighting with his family, and I'll let you flesh that a little bit more, ended up being bounced. And it really changed the way business happened at the supermarket chain, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, sure. The whole thing turned upside down, and this company was shut down. It's almost $5 billion company now. And the CEO, Arthur T. Demoulas, the T is important because he was fired by his cousin, Arthur S. Demoulas. And Arthur T. was running this company for nearly a decade. By all accounts, the company was running on all cylinders, really performing well, growing fast. And then his cousin, who happened to be a majority shareholder, he led the side of the family who were majority shareholders, decided that they wanted to cash out. And people knew that this was going to change the way that this company operated, as it had since 1917. So they saw that he was really, Arthur T, the CEO, was the only obstacle in this plan. And so they fired him, and that's what started this whole protest movement that spanned three states.
Wow. And the protest movement meant that the people working there said, we're not going to do this, and basically went out and started picketing and all that sort of thing. And the community did, too, as well, right?
That's the amazing thing, is how quickly this thing spread. It started with a very small core of mostly executives who were very upset. They were so close with this man. And they said, we don't want to work here unless he's our CEO. And then it quickly spread to people in the warehouse, truck drivers who refused to send shipments out. It spread to the stores where employees at every level of this company, management and frontline workers all together, were really united around this. And then it continued to spill into customers. And there was a 2 million people boycotted this store for 6 weeks. They took their business elsewhere. It didn't even stop there, because it also went to suppliers. And many of the suppliers, some of them with multi-million dollar accounts that absolutely depend on Market Basket for their business's survival, they said, until Arthur T's back, we're not doing business with you anymore. It's the most incredible thing I've ever come across in my years in academia and studying business.
Yeah, I just think it's an incredibly powerful story and speaks to company culture. So what does that say about Market Basket's company culture?
Yeah, it has a very unique company culture, and I think there's a lot to admire there. I mean, they one thing they do is they really take care of their people as family. And a lot of companies say that, but this company has this rare quality about it where so many employees, they give their colleagues rides. When people face a hardship, which all of us do, people at this company tend to rally around each other and help each other out. Sometimes it's, a loan or something. Sometimes it's a ride. And a lot of this is coming from the CEO himself. I can't tell you how many stories I've heard of the CEO going to the funeral service when an assistant manager at one of the stores has a loved one who dies. So maybe like their mother dies or something. Arthur T. shows up at the funeral service for maybe 5 or 10 minutes just to make an appearance and pay his respects, and then he's off. But those kind of small little gestures go such a long way at this company.
And so now, well, first of all, a couple of things. They've obviously built that sense of family, like you say, and there's no doubt. And that continues, by the way, because you have a lot of families that work for Market Basket, right? Like a mother, maybe her kid, maybe a cousin. It also becomes that weave of family inside, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I've also met a lot of people who they'll have multiple people in the family who were working at this company. And people like that, during this protest, they were shutting down the company. They were basically saying, we don't know if this company is going to end up shutting down, partly even because of this protest. So they had a ton to risk. I mean, they put everything on the line. They're, three, four, five people in their own family that are putting their jobs on the line for this. So it was a tremendous sacrifice.
What's Arthur T doing now?
Arthur T is back in control. Because of the protest, he was able to take back control of the company and purchase the shares of that other side. The other side had intended to sell it to a big supermarket conglomerate based in Belgium, but they obviously lost interest as this protest continued, and that opened up the road for Arthur T to purchase those shares. So now he's in full control. They're growing like crazy. A lot of people that had never heard of Market Basket before, even people living in the area, are saying, what's this all about?
So it was almost like advertising for them, right?
It really did. It piqued a lot of people's curiosity. I had shopped there a lot myself, and I have a lot of family members who are big fans and part of this almost cultish devotion to the company. But I never really fully appreciated it myself either until I started studying it. And now, I see things there, and I just appreciate it so much. Even just being in the store, there's a certain energy in the place. There's a lot of interaction between between employees and customers. Like, I mean, this will amaze a lot of people. First of all, they have people in the aisles all the time, so there's always people to ask, which I'm sure many of your listeners will be, you know, will think when the last time they were in the supermarket, how difficult it is just to find someone to ask where that pie crust is, right? That's what always happens to me when my wife sends me out for a pie crust, and, you know, there are different types. There's a frozen type of this, and there's never anybody to ask. So it's it really can be frustrating from a customer. And at the checkout aisle, almost all those checkouts are open. They all have two people working there, two-person teams. There's one person at the cash register. There's another bagging groceries. So you go into the store, and you feel like you're getting a personal sort of one-on-one attention. And they've stripped out all of the technology, any technology that runs counter to that idea, they've stripped out. So you don't see the automated checkout counters. Those don't appear at this store because they believe that it takes away from that one-on-one sort of experience.
Yeah, so cool. And also, it's like you say, that one-on-one experience. So there is that sense of originality, I bet, is what it's all about.
That's right. Yeah, they follow their own drummer, so to speak, and that played out in this protest as well. And is that when everyone in the world, and I have to admit, you know, I'm ashamed to admit now, even myself included, I said, you know, this, I admire what they're trying to do, but they're not going to be able to succeed at getting back control of this company. But they said, to their credit, they said, we have to get this done. We're going to find a way to get it done. It doesn't matter that the textbooks say you can't go against the board's decision to fire a CEO. We want our CEO back. This is our company. And that's what they did, and they pulled it off.
We're speaking with Daniel Corshon. He's one of the authors, rather, of a really awesome book called We Are Market Basket, the story of the unlikely grassroots movement that saved a beloved business, no question about it. As you mentioned, you're in academia, and you're at Drexel. So when you're teaching students or talking with students, do you use this as an example?
Oh, I'm just about to. My poor students are going to get a quiz on it in a matter of hours. So you'll see what their response is. But yes, I mean, I brought this into my class. There's so much to learn from this case. I mean, from my standpoint, a lot of it starts with what's a company in business for in the first place, anyway. You know, a hundred years ago, economists used to see business as a way to serve society, and somewhere along the way in the last hundred years, I don't know exactly how, but we've sort of lost sight of that, and we've gotten so focused on the profit generating goal of companies that we've really lost sight of what companies are really there for. And this company, I think, is one of a few models that we have now of companies that say, yes, we're in a sort of mundane business. It's not one that's really exciting to people, the supermarket business, but there's a real importance to this. I mean, we're helping people, and through low prices at the store, through the way that they serve customers, give everyone a lot of respect, the way they deal with employees, there's an importance to this company in the community, and we saw when there was a danger of that company being taken away, you see how people said, no, this is something important. We need to keep this here.
Wow. It is. It's an incredible story. Daniel, thanks so much. Good luck with the book. And Drexel, my mother went to Drexel. I grew up outside of Philadelphia, so go Drexel.
It's a lot of fun to teach here. Thanks a lot.
Cool. Thank you.
Dahibo Tea Club's original pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. So it naturally has antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-infection, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. But maybe more importantly, Dahibo Tea Club's original pure Paudi Arco Super Tea builds corpuscles in the blood which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer happens to die in oxygen. The tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone
someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. Dahebo Tea Club's original pure Pouty Arco Super Tea is only $34.95 plus shipping. Order now at DrinkSuperTea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's DrinkSuperTea.com, 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.